about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there
brains
is
aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart.
We don't have any idea why
we're
doing
so smart.
Most of the things that we're doing.
But here's the deal.
You know the old joke, right? How do you make a small fortune in the stock market? Start with a large fortune.
I'm Art Markman.
I'm Bob Duke.
I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and this is Two Guys on Your Head. Today, the psychology of investment.
So if you follow the financial scoreboard, sometimes known as the various stock indices, then you probably noticed that in March, they took a nosedive, bottomed out, and then rode themselves slowly back up. And have actually now, many of those indices, they've reached back up to the point since they fell off the precipice. And this creates an interesting situation because for a number of people, when stocks went down, there was a loss to be had. And what's fascinating is how difficult it is to deal with those kinds of losses in a variety of ways that are fundamentally rooted in people's decision-making processes. So there is a temptation, for example, when things start to go down, to sell. Obviously, the ideal thing to do would be to sell before anything goes down and then to buy again when they hit their trough and ride it all the way back up. But in point of fact, what happens is people see things free falling and think, I got to get rid of this. And so there are people who then sell pretty deep in the hole and then wait until it looks like things are getting better and buy after things have already taken a pretty high rise up, which is bad economics. But what it does is it reduces a lot of the uncertainty about the situation. Because when things are falling, you think, well, how deep could they go? I don't know. I don't want to have to pay attention to this every day. And so you just get rid of the stock or the investment so that you don't have to think about it anymore because now it's out of sight, out of mind. And then when things start getting better, you think, that's good. I like it when things are going up. And so now you buy. But by the time you buy, you've missed out on the real growth. So good for your anxiety, maybe. Bad for your portfolio.
Okay, and I think what Art's explanation sort of illustrates is how much we're motivated by trying to make ourselves feel better and decrease our anxiety, which are not trivial goals, by the way. I mean, those are both really admirable goals, but they often exclude the logic of things that unfold slowly over time. And so if we're thinking about the variations in the stock market, which I think, especially at this time right now, and the situation that our country is in while we're taping this, vividly illustrates what has been said many times by economists. The stock market is not the economy. The stock market is not the economy. The stock market is not the economy. But I think it's interesting. We've talked before about, you know, the great seminal work of Kahneman and Tversky and about our feelings about loss aversion, and that we feel emotionally losses more intensely than we feel potential gains. And when we are trying to avoid losses, even if they're just in the abstract.
You know, and I think actually one of the things that investment advisors often recommend to most investors is if you have enough risk tolerance to invest in the market to begin with, buy an indexed fund, which basically spreads your investment out over a whole bunch of the stocks that make up that index, and then stop paying attention to the index.
Yeah.
Because you've decided you're going to invest in the stock market, so it's going to rise and fall as it does. And if you pay attention to the daily ups and downs, you're just going to give yourself undue agitation. And frankly, if you are that worried about the investment, there's a pretty good chance you can't afford to be invested in the stock market at that point, either financially or emotionally.
For anybody who's in the echelon of financial security, that anything related to your personal finances, whether it's your retirement account or anything, is invested in stocks, you're probably in a stratum that we've talked about before, that you have enough to be happy, right? I mean, your personal needs are met. You're able to feed yourself and your family and get medical care and have a nice house to live in and those kinds of things. And we've said many times that after you get to that basic needs met, there's really very little correlation between increases in financial wealth and happiness. But what's interesting is how investing for many people who do it for whatever reason, because they want to have more money or someone told them it's important and they should do it, add a level of anxiety to their life that actually diminishes their happiness over time, because now they're paying attention to something that has an inherent variability in it, right? It vacillates all the time. And if every nudge up or down is going to cause you joy and sorrow, you're going to be pretty unhappy. And I think, you know, what we've talked about in a lot of different contexts is how the predictability of one day following the next day, following the next day. Not that, you know, a little surprise sometimes adds a little frisson to your life and a little, you know, things go wrong and you're kind of sad, but generally the sameness of your emotional state from one day to another is pretty important to a sense of well-being. And so when you inject this other source of variation into your life and it's associated with money, and if you care about that money a lot, which many people care about money a lot, you're going to be unhappy if that becomes a source of attention for you.
But it is fascinating. I mean, we do have a tendency, I think, to regret some of these things when at some point there really isn't anything you can do about it.
I think the big thing about this is not the momentary happiness and sadness that you feel looking at these things. But really, it raises the question of what in a given day should command your attention. I mean, of all the things that you're experiencing in life, I mean, the people you interact with and being with your family and the other kinds of things that you get to do in your job and those kinds of things, how much attention do you want to devote to things that, as I was saying earlier, really don't have any real consequence until such time as you're going to actually do something with the investment, whatever that happens to be.
Next week, we'll talk about the psychology of seasonal change with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke. David Alvarez is usually our engineer, and I'm Rebecca McEnroy. I produce Two Guys on Your Head for KUT Radio in Austin, Texas.